All right, going to start the top of Daf Amud Aleph here. We're talking about a story about Unklus Barclonimus Igaya. So Unklus, who we know from the translation that he provided, that we see on every Chumash, was actually a ger. So the Kesar was upset about his stance or the fact that he had converted, and therefore he was trying to either capture him or bring him back. So Shadar Kesar Gundo de Romai Abatre. He sent a legion of troops after him. Mashchinu Bikrai. So he would convince them, or he would draw them into Judaism with Psukim, and Iguyar, they all were mitgayer, and they were unable to bring him back to the Caesar. Hadar Shadar, Gunda de Romayach Rina Batre. So he sent another legion of troops after him. Amaluhu, Lotimwele, Velomide. Don't speak to him. Abu Shaklova Azlu. So when they were interacting, Amar lehu, emlechu milta bi'alma. Let me just tell you one thing. You know, so they weren't talking to him, they weren't saying anything to him, but as they were going along, he says, let me just mention to you one thing, which is, gifura, nakat nura kamei pifura. The, let's call him the, I don't know, the deputy or the lowest official has to carry the flame or the light in front of the Pifioria, which is some sort of official today, right? Obviously, it's used in a different context in modern Hebrew. Pifiora the Duchsa. The Pifiora will take it in front of the Duchsa, it's probably a mayor. The Duchsa, the Hegmona. And the Duchsa will hold the light in front of the Hegmona, which is like a governor, Hegmona the Koma. And the Hegmona will do it for the Koma, for the king. Koma, mi nakadura mekame inche. Does the king ever carry light before the others? I mean that there's a hierarchy here. You have a hierarchy where you're going from the lowest to the highest official or position, and each one of the lower positions provides a service or light to the position above them. On the other hand, once you reach the highest position, which is the king, then he services nobody. Everybody services him, he services nobody. So what would happen by a king? Who does he hold light? Amalelo. The king holds light for no one. The king doesn't work for anybody, everybody works for the king. Samalu, the Kodesh Baruch Hu Nakanuro Kamei Yisrael. Kodesh Baruch Hu held the light before Bnei Yisrael. Dechtiv, Hashem Olech Lifnehem Yomam. The Hashem goes before Bnei Yisrael to give them light, which by the day and by the night. And so he says, well, if the king serves nobody and everybody services them, that Kodesh Baruch Hu, God, services Bnei Yisrael is an indication of where Bnei Yisrael are in the hierarchy. So therefore they were, again, he convinced another group, Igayrakulu, they all were mitgayer. Hadar Shadar Gunda Achwina Batre, the Caesar sent a third legion after him, Amalu, Lo Tishtayim Mide Bahade. Not only should you not converse with him, but you actually have no conversation whatsoever. I mean, the last group he sent said, don't speak to them. Over here he says, don't even converse, no interaction, nothing. Kinokit Le Va'azle. So when they were going along, Chazim Zusta, the manchua pitcho, he saw a mezuzah that was hanging on the door. Otev yodeala, put his hand on it. From lo, my high. Says, what's this thing here on the door? Amalei, emalon, not. You tell us. We don't know what it is. You tell us. So amalo, min hagosh lolam. The way the world works is, melech basar adam yoshev bifnim, the king, human king of flesh and blood, he sits on the inside, and vavadav yishar mimoto bachutz. And his servants guard him from the outside. V'ilu HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it works the other way. Avodah Mifnim, we live on the inside. V'hu Mishamram B'Bachutz, we have the mezuzah there that protects them on the outside. Shenemar, Hashem Yishmor Tzeitecho V'Echo Mi'atah V'yad Olam. Hashem provides that service. So again, the fact that Hashem is doing that for Bnei Yisrael is indication of the standing, the exalted nature of Bnei Yisrael. Otherwise, why would a Kodesh Baruch Hu be providing protection? Again, if you look at the natural way of the world, is that the one who's important is on the inside, the ones who service them are on the outside. So, once again, they have Iguyer, they were all Mitkayer, Betulo Shadar Batre. Caesar figured that he had lost enough troops, enough legions, and he gave up trying to bring Unklus Barclonimus back, or trying to arrest him. Right. So that was what I was going to just say, that here are the indications that you just need to touch it. It's really to jog one's memory as they're walking in and out of the importance of the mezuzah, that Hashem is shomer and keep in mind all these items. But again, the idea was to place one's hand on the mezuzah, not necessarily to kiss the mezuzah. Right? Vayomer Hashem la shnei goyim bevitnech. So here, this is when Rivka goes to seek counsel about her pregnancy. So she gets a message from HaKadosh Baruch Hu that shnei goyim bevitnech, that you have two nations inside of you. I mean, Yehuda Marav, al tikra goyim ela geyim, right? Based on the Korean dictative, don't say goyim, but rather geyim. Geyim means exalted. Ze Antoninus v'Rebish. The two, there will be two exalted ones that come forth from you. Gemara says this refers to Antoninus and Rabbi. Shelo pasku mi'al shulchanam. That their table was never empty of lo chazeret, not some sort of lettuce, green leaf. Lo kishot is either gourds or zucchini. Lo tznon and radishes. Lo bimot chama, velo bimot shamim. Not in the summertime and not in the wintertime. Damar mar, tznon mechatech ochel. It's known it's good for digestion and that it cuts up the other food. Chazeret mehapech, machal. The lettuce or greeny leaf, whatever it is, turns over the machal in the stomach. And kishot, marchiv me'ayim. The zucchini and the gourds expand one's stomach to allow them to consume more, to eat in a pleasant manner. Ah, Tana de Bei Rabbi Shmuel, Lomani Kashman Kishu'in, Neshikashin the Gufo Shel Adam. They're called Kishu'in because they're bad for the individual. Kicharavot, like daggers or like swords. Says Lo Kash Abirabrave Habzutre. Those are the big ones, and those are the small ones. So it doesn't indicate which is which, but assume that the larger ones, which are ripe, are good for the individual, and the smaller ones, which are not fully ripe or hard, are probably not good for the individual's digestion. So now, what's the significance of this? It's interesting, Tosis makes a comment here, which is very important, because we know from the Gemara Ketubot and other places that about Rebbe, it is said that he was lo nene me'olam hazeh, that he got no benefit from this world. So now, Tosis says, well, okay, what do we do with this? So, afakav damrino and she Rebbe lo nene me'olam. So then what are we talking about? All these foods, all this grand... Right, so that's the Tosos's answer is that's exactly what Shaul was suggesting, that it's not Rebbe himself who's consuming them, but rather he had many people joining him at the table, whether those were Aniyim, whether he was his entourage, he was an important Nasi, so he had many people that partook of the meal in his house, so the provisions are not for himself necessarily, but for those that were with him, and indicating his exaltedness, but yet he was not the one who consumed them. Honestly, the answer, or the answer that's given by many, which seems to have more application, is that the fact that he ate and enjoyed me'olam hazeh, right, does not mean lo ne'elan me'olam afilu etzbaktana. Ene me'olam tzukana, it's not done in a manner that is mekadei shem shemayim. That's either it's done in a manner that enhances one avodat Hashem, meaning that it's used as a vehicle to enhance one's avodat Hashem, or one could say even more, that the consumption of olam hazeh is only problematic when a person doesn't elevate it and is not mekadesh it. If one leaves it as chulin or simply as a meal and enjoyment of food, the answer is yes, then you are ne'anem olam hazeh. But Rebbe, who consumed it and did it, like Hadashim Shemayim, was to say a bracha, it's a male, you know, use something for something that is kadosh, and give it that form of kedusha, then he's not classified as being nenem olam hazeh, even though he's eating food and he's partaking of olam hazeh. So that's another. Right. So there you go. They have anything in the mundane world, one can just look at it as being just a human activity and enjoyment, or one can elevate it and be mikadish, that which is there. So that's the other possibility of how to answer or reconcile that question with regards to Rebbe. Alright, now, Mara says, Yom Alida, V'yom HaMita. So now we say by regards to Yom HaMita depends on whether there's a Srefa or an Srefa. So Mara says, Mechlau, from this we conclude, to Meir Saba Loshna Mita Sheyesh Basrefa, Loshna Mita Sheyin Basrefa, Pachi Balavadat Kochavim. According to Rabbi Meir, it's irrelevant whether they are burning the possessions of the king or not burning the possessions of the king. Only thing that matters is that the king died. It's enough that they worship Avodah Zarah. Alma Srefa Lav Chukahi. So the conclusion of this is that Srefa is not a chok, it's not some sort of chok la Avodah Zarah. The Srefa is not what brings one to Avodah Zarah, it's the death of the king. Michlal. From that, you would also conclude that the Rabbanon Savrei Sreifa Chukah. The Rabbanon believe there's something unique or something particular about the Sreifa that is a Chukla Barut Chachavim. Because otherwise, right, the Rabbanon only Oser Sreifa and not Oser Mita without Sreifa. It indicates that they think Sreifa is the significant act over here, and that Sreifa is a Chuk Levodat Chachavim. It says, Vatanya, we have a Braisa. Sorfina al Melachim, Velo Mitache Amori. We had this in Sanhedrin, that you could burn the king's possessions. I mean, this is talking about a Jewish king. Velo Mitache Amori. And that's not an emulation of the Amori. It's not an emulation of Avodah Zarah. It's not Chukat Akum Darche Amori. Vichukahi. If it's such a chok, anan echad sarfinan. How do we burn the kings? I mean, the Jewish kings, how do we burn their possessions if that is a chok of avodah zarah? Va'aktiv, and we have a pasuk that says, uvuchukotehem, lo telechu. We may not emulate the nations around us. We may not act in the same way that they do with things that are directed towards avodah zarah. Ella must be, dekuli alma sreifa lav chukahi. Everybody agrees that Sreifa is not a Chuk L'Avodah Zarah. Ela Chashivutohi. It's an indication of importance, of significance. V'hocha HaKemifligei. This is what they're arguing about. Rameir Sever Loshna Mita She'ech Basreifa. Loshna Mita She'ein Basreifa. It makes no difference whether the death of the king involves burning of his possessions or not. There's still some sort of Avodah Zarah worship that is associated with the death of the king. Rabbanon Savrei Mita Sheish Basreifa Chashivaluhu. A Mita that includes Sreifa is an indication of the significance of this death. And when you have significance, Upalchiba. And then they do worship the Avodah Zarah. When they burn the possessions, they worship Avodah Zarah because of that significance. Shein Basreifa, on the other hand, when there is no Sreifa there, Lo Chashiva, that's an indication of a lack of significance in the death of this king. Velo Upalchiba. And therefore they do not worship Avodah Zarah in that death of the king. So you see that the difference revolves around the chashivut and not whether it's a chukah, one of the chukot ha'akum.
Because they consider the king important enough to burn his stuff, and they consider his death significant enough to make a damage.
Worship the Avodah Zarah, right, where it's designated or dedicated towards the Avodah Zarah. Gufa, Sarfim al Melachim, Vein Bo Mishum Darche Mori. So let's quote this. Sarfim al Melachim, Vein Bo Mishum Darche Mori, Shneamar. So what is our proof? Our proof is from the pasuk in Yirmiyahu speaking, when Yirmiyahu speaks to Tzidkiyahu and tells him what's going to happen to him. He said, Tzidkiyahu, first of all, you're going to see Melech Bavel. There were many in the V.A. Sheker running around saying that even though Melech Bavel was surrounding him and laying siege to the city, that he wasn't going to be there anymore. Or he was going to go back and they were going to defeat him. So Yirmiyahu breaks the good news to Tzidkiyahu that, you know what, first of all, the city's going to fall to Nebuchadnezzar. You are going to see him eye to eye. And you and all your family are going to be taken to Babel. But there is one good news, one piece of good news. He says that you will not die in Babel, you'll not be left in Babel, but rather, b'shalom tamut, you will die in peace, u'b'misreifot avotecha melochim, and you will be burnt the same way that your fathers were. I mean, like, u'b'misreifot avotecha, that you will be burnt, you will be given the honor like the kings before you, like your forefathers before you. So even though Tzidkiyahu again was taken to Babel, he was blinded, taken to Babel, eventually when he dies, he's allowed a burial like the king, like a king of Yehuda. And he says, what's the normal burial of a king of Yehuda? Is that they burn all of his possessions, not only his possessions, but his forefathers' possessions before him. This was a common praxis. So you see that this is the practice of the Jews. Ukshashem sirfim al melachim, kach sirfim al nisim. This kavod, a significance that is assigned to the king, that we don't allow his possessions to go on beyond him, and we burn him, burn those possessions, not only does it apply to the kings, but also applies to the nasi, right? When there were no longer kings anymore in Klal Yisrael, but rather nasiim, that were the princes or the leaders of the Jewish nation in Eretz Yisrael, that they would have that same qualification, that same classification. Ma'im sofim ha-melachim, what do they burn? So mitatan, Uklei Tashmishan. So they burn their bed and all of their utensils, all of their items that they use. Umase, Shemait Rabbi Gamliel Azakein. Gamliel Azakein passed away, who was a Nasi. So since he was a Nasi, we just said before that they burnt, they did a Masrifot like they did to the kings for the Nasi. Vesaraf Alav, Unklu Zager, Shiv'im Manot Tzuri. And Unklu Zager, which is the previous story, right? Unklu Zager, Kolinimus, So Unculus, before I would say Unculus Barcolonium was his, because there he was in reference to Rome or to the Caesar. And in relation to that, he Unculus Barcolonium. Over here he's in reference to Unculus Achaean or status within Kali, so then he's Unculus Ager. So now you have Unculus Ager burnt because of Rabbi Gamliel as a Cain, Shibim Manetzuri. It's 70 Manetzuri, it's a significant sum of money. Vamart. Didn't you already say, Mahin Sofim Alehim? What do they burn in them? Mitatan, Uklei Tashmishan. The bed and all of the utensils, they use, the items that they use. So why are you burning money all of a sudden? Ema. So the Gemara says, let's amend this, Shibim Manetzuri. That they burnt, what it means that he didn't burn 70 manetzuri, he didn't burn 70 manetzuri, but rather items or clay tash michel that were worth 70 manetzuri. Okay, so then we'll stop. The Gemara is going to ask a question in a second. So what's important until this point in time, there are two things that we really have to look into. One of them is important here is the Tosafot. Tosafot over here discusses something called Chukot Akum. When does Chukot Akum apply and when does it not apply? I mean that here the Gemara indicates that if something's written in the Torah, here in the Navi, the Tanakh, that it's okay. That it doesn't take on the status of Chukot Akum. So here we have that Ubimasrifot Abutecha, right, in the way that your forefathers had their possessions burned, we're going to burn your possessions. But we know already that the Ovdei Avodah Zarah already usurped it and took it, and they were also burning items. So how come over there, how come that doesn't disqualify to make it into Chukot Akum? So what's the answer? The answer is, once it's documented, once it's written in the Torah, it cannot be switched to Chukot Akum. Well, if that's true, what happened to the Matzevot? Matzevah was a way of bringing Karbonot to Hashem, a single rock that is placed, and then a Makriv Karbonot on it that was done by the Avot. Yet, we don't use Matzevot anymore because it's Asher Shaneh Hashem Lokecha. Hashem no longer likes the Matzevot because Kol Amim, all these nations, the Shiva Amim, usurped it and they started using it, the Avodah Zarah. Right, so why does the Torah, or why do we come around to that conclusion that the Torah no longer likes it? So the Gemara says, we had this actually in Sanhedrin with regards to Saif, that with Hereg, when it comes to beheading an individual, the Gemara says, well, how could you do this? Romi Amachus does this. So there were two opinions there of how to kill. One was a kupitz, and one was with the cheref. So the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda over there, I think, was that we did not want to use the cheref, but rather the kupitz, because the cheref was like chukot akum. That was like the machus. That's the way the machus killed. The man said, no, it's fine. The ketiva be'araisa, because it's written in the Torah. So Tosafot says, how do we deal with this? Written in the Torah. If it's written in the Torah, it's yes or it's no. How does it deal with it? And then the Gemara rejects that answer. So Tosafot differentiates, and it's a very, very important differentiation, about different types of Chukot Akum. And those Chukot Akum will have implications about whether you can apply the din of its Ketuv B'Torah. It says, L'kach Perishri. So the Ri over here explains, it's the middle, it's almost like the dead center of the big Tosafot here on the left. Perishri, the Trei Gavnei Chukahavu. There are two different types of chukot akum. Echad shosim l'shem chok l'avodat kochavim. One which is a chok that is done for avodah zarah. Be'echad shosim l'shem dat hevel v'shtut shelahem. Something that they do, but has no real meaning, has no significance in terms of the avodah zarah. V'hocha b'shmaitin, in our case over here, we're talking about a case, mari ba'oto chok shosim l'shem avodat kochavim. So there, over here, we're dealing with a shame, something that's done the shame of the Chachamim. And that's what the Gemara is saying over here. The machlokes over here between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim is about this chok, the chok of the Zerah, whether it applies or not. So that's the machlokes. That was the half of meaning of the Gemara. The Gemara says, wait a minute. How could that be? It says, it's a chok of the Zerah. Why should it matter whether they worshipped or didn't worship at this time? And the fact that it's a chok of the Zerah should make it a sur. So even though it's written in the Torah, it should have no bearing over here, because it's a chok lo avodah zarah. So that's why he says, ha, ktivu kutem lo te'echo, v'afak av dechtivu be'oraita, even though there's an explicit pasuk, ish le'asor, she'osor came, ish lehem hu chok lo avodah chachamim, dumya d'matzeva. So it's a chok lo avodah chachamim, similar to the case that we raised before of matzeva, of a single stone, that even though the avot were makrivit, nevertheless, Hashem calls it now a chok lo avodah chachamim, and therefore it's Sanei, or Hashem does not want that type of worship done anymore, and says, Lo takim lecha matzeva. Then the Gemara says, okay, maybe it's not the chok lo avodah zarah. So fine, it's not a chok for Avodah Zarah, but it's a stam chok that they did, something they did. Ah, once you have a stam chok, then we can apply hadichtiva be'oraisa. It's written in the Torah, the writing or the fact that it's mentioned in the Torah can overcome such a practice or such a chok. So Tosa says, whether it's a chok le Avodah Zarah, or a meaningless chok, either one of those two items are asur. But if it's written in the Torah, that will overcome a chok of shtut and hevel, but will not overcome a chok of Avodah Zarah. That means once it's been usurped or hijacked by the Avodah Zarah, there's no way to overcome that. We no longer will practice such an item because it's a chok of Avodah Zarah. The examples, for instance, matzeva that Tosfos brings, we have a similar item by Shavuot, by decorating inside of the shuls with greenery. So that was something, again, that was usurped or hijacked by the Ovdei Avodah Zarah. So therefore, even though that was a practice for many years, once it was usurped by them, we no longer did it. Even though our minhag or our din had preceded. Because once it's usurped towards Avodah Zarah, we no longer do it. Now, we have a chok of shtut and hevel, a chok that is done by them, some sort of practice that doesn't necessarily have meaning, or it's not necessarily directed towards Avodah Zarah. Then in that case, we cannot emulate them unless it's written in the Torah. So the cases where it's written in the Torah, for instance, maybe by Hereg, Saif. So maybe in that instance we can say that that is in the Torah, or the type of mitah that is in the Torah is not necessarily written, and therefore it's not documented in the Torah, but we still do Hereg because it would be menuval to kill somebody with the kupitz. So therefore it overcomes it because of that directive. But either way, that overcomes this. It's a chok. The fact that they kill with the sword is not a chok l'avodah zarah. It's just their chok. That's the way they do it. That's the way they behead. That's the way they put people to death. So therefore, that chok can be overcome with ketivei b'doraita. And similar over here. Once we say sorfim ala melachim is no longer a chok l'avodah zarah, but a stam chok that they did it, then if our minag preceded, or our minag is documented in the Tanakh, then we will practice it, even though it's a chok l'avodah zarah, or not l'avodah zarah, but chok shall the ovdei avodah zarah, even though they're not using it for avodah zarah. So that's a very, very important distinction in chukas akum. Chukas akum are disallowed for one of two reasons, either because you worship avodah zarah, or it has no meaning. It's useless, it has no meaning. That part of useless and no meaning can be overcome if it exists in the oraisa, or we have a minhag that precedes it. The chok l'avodah zarah can never be overcome. That means when it comes to certain practices of the Chachamim or the other nations, you have to check and see if there's some meaning behind it. There's some value behind it. If it has some value, then maybe you could do it or maybe you could wear it. Both that are brought, the incidents with the dress of a doctor or the dress of a judge, that they used to wear capes and a cap, or they used to wear, the doctors used to wear a certain uniform. The questioner said to them, isn't that a problem of Chukot HaAkom? It's something that has no, they wear it, but it has no meaning. But there's nothing about it that is necessary to be a doctor or to be a judge. There's nothing, there's no necessity to do this. And yet they wear it, and now we're going to emulate them, and we're going to wear it as well. He responds that he thinks that it's not necessarily true, that it's meaningless in this case. It's not meaningless because by the judge, it's an indication of position, stature, and that the people have to mitnaheg bekavod towards that individual. I mean that it's not just that he wears it stam, but that wearing of it gives him a position of authority, gives him a certain amount of directive towards those that are addressing him, that they have to respect this individual and that they have to listen to this individual. Same thing with the doctor. It's an indication that this is a doctor, someone who is going to, you know, in the hospital, you have no idea who's coming into the room to deal with the person. How do you know if it's a doctor? If he's dressed like a doctor, then you know that he's a doctor. He's an indication that the person's a doctor. That's also of value. To know that information, to have that, is also important. So if you can then indicate that maybe it's not just a meaningless type of garb, if it's not a meaningless type of garb, then maybe there is room to say that it's not chukot l'akum. As opposed to maybe graduation, the cap and gown of graduation, where there may not be a significance of any sort. And that might be a chukot akum that has no... Right, but that may not be... You don't have to have the dress to do that. I mean, that the dress is part of a ceremony that necessarily doesn't have any, not significant in any way, not necessary in any way. It's possible that it's not. I'm just saying that that might be different than the judge and the doctor, where it's clear that their professions are enhanced by the dress, right, as opposed to graduation, where it doesn't necessarily enhance the fact that one has made an achievement or has reached a milestone. They could celebrate the milestone without having that specific dress upon them.
Clearly, it was a clue
that these were what's up. Right. So, the Midrashim or Midrashay Halacha over there ask, why is it that Hashem was Oser Matzeva when we know that the Avot used the Matzeva? Why? So they answer that's exactly this process. This process that is usurped by the Avodah of the Arzarah. So that's the reason, it's almost like the reasoning behind it. It's explaining to you why did it get changed? Why did its status change? So they explain, the Midrashay Halacha over there explain that the status changed because of Sanei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's where we learn this Halacha. That something that was written in the Oraisa and is usurped, that we can't use it, is learned from Matzeva. That's where we know it from. Alright, that's what we have the Masorah about. That's the Torah Shebaal Peh. It tells us that's why it was asked. I mean, that's what all the Midrashay Halacha ask on that statement. That's exactly what we learn from it. Right, so that's one issue to deal with is the Tosafot. The second issue is Rashi. Rashi says over here, makes a small comment, but a small comment that carries a lot of weight with it. And that is, what is this Manetzuri? Manetzuri is the Tzurian coins. So what are the Tzurian coins? So Rashi says over here about the Tzurian coins, he says, Mishkol Shel Tzur, that this, a Manetzuri, what's the coin of Tzuri? Is a Kesef Saraf Tzuri, Mishkol Shel Tzur, Vahu Chav Hei Slayim. It's 25 Sela. Vasela dala dinarim, and then a sela has 4 dinarim in it. Vadinar hu mishkal zahuv konstanitna, and a dinar is the same thing as the gold coin, the Constantine gold coin, which is a coin that was found in their time, a coin that they had. And based on that, Rashi says, I can tell you what the dinar. The dinar is similar to a coin that we find today in us that's used in our day. And if that's the case, then you can be figure out the values of whether or the weights of certain things like the chatzia shekel, machatzita shekel, items we have to pay, 5 selah, the bechor, all those values we've determined based on the fact that Rashi just gave us an indication of what that coin is. So Rashi says it over here, it carries weight. He mentions it in one other place in Baba Kama as well. And Baba Kama talks about using kesef tzuri. Rashi mentions it again. V'adinar mishkalo zahav. It has a weight like zahav. V'chein korim b'konstantinina. Lezahav, dinar. They call their gold coin a dinar. Right? So therefore we know, Bahu, Shnaim, it's in Boba Kamo, Daflam and Vovin Bet, Bahu, Shnaim, Umechsal, Mishkal, Barzel. And that's 2.5 of the iron weights. Whatever that means. I mean, obviously we don't know. Rashi ala Torah. Also, in explaining Rashi in the talking about the Torah, it says, Shloshim, Shkalim, Yitain, about the Eved Kanani that is killed. That one has to pay a knas of shloshim skalim. Over there he says, v'shekel mishkalo arba zehuvim. The shekel is 4 zehuvim, like he says here, 4 dinar, 4 zehuvim. Shem chatzi unkiya. That's a half an unkiya, which is a coin again found in their time. The mishkal yasher shel klonia. If I look in klonia, that coin, that zehuv that I said is the Constantine gold coin, in our coinage, in our currency, is equivalent to a chatzi unkiya. Mishkal Yashar Shel Kolonia. That's where he's living, right? In Cologne. Right? That is equal to a Chatzi Unkia. That's Rashi's statement. The Rif, on the other hand, the Rif, this is a Rif found in Kiddushin. He's talking about a Pruta. Over there, the Rif says about the, when we get down to a Pruta and a Zuza, what's a Zuz? He says a Zuz is the Shashranag Vu Dinar Zahav Shel Arabim. It's the gold coin of the Arabic or the Arabian gold coin. That Zuz is the Shashranag. So that's what the Rif, all that the Rif says. The Ramban ala Torah takes a huge issue with Rashi, and Rashi's interpretation that the coin, or this gold coin, is equal to a dinar. And so the Ramban, on the case of Machatzit HaShekel, it's Ramban in Perek Lamed, Pasuk Yud Gimel, al Machatzit HaShekel, he brings down Rashi, and he says, oh, Rashi also says this in the Gemara Baba Kama, it doesn't mention our Gemara, but as well. And then he says, V'enu kein, he says, Rashi's wrong. Ki malchei goyim pachtu azuvim, they diminished or they shrunk the gold coins. The gold coins that we have today are of a lesser value than the gold coins in the previous generations because they shrunk their value. And therefore, the fiyah shurim animtzeim b'divreihem, the shurim that are found in the gonim and the rishonim, and who does he quote? He quotes the Rif. from Kiddushin. He says, "Shebetalmud gedolim min azuvim animtzayim ayotzim mizmanenu." The gold coins that you're talking about are bigger than the gold coins that we find today that are in circulation. Krov l'shlisha shekel, about a third in value more. A shekel, therefore, a shekel is worth shloshet revi ukia, or unkia, three quarters of an unkia. The mishkel sharetz hazot. The post of Rashi thinks it's half an unkia. The Ramban believes that it's three quarters of an unkia, about a third more of a shekel. I mean, the value of the shekel today was diminished, so therefore you have to add a third of shekel in order to get to back to the old shekel, or the shekel in the time of the Chachamim. So that's what Ramban. The Ramban argues on Rashi. The Ramban, later in his life, we know, travels to Eretz Israel and ends up in Akko. At the end, it's in the back of the Ramban Ala Torah, the Ramban's Pirush Ala Torah. There's a letter that he writes back to his son about an experience he had in Akko. In that experience, they were the elders of Akko, they were digging, and they found a coin. They found a gold coin, an old coin. It says, "V'chani Hashem rekoch zachiti v'ati l'Akko. Matzati sham b'yad zikne aretz, matbeya kesef, mifutach p'tuchei chotam." A coin that was formed, meaning that p'tuchei chotam means that it was a minted, stamped coin. Mitzido achad ke'in makel shaket. On one side it has a makel, like Aaron's makel. Umitzido ashenem ke'in tzlochit. The other side has a pitcher of oil. Uvshnei atzadim saviv katab mifutach beheitev. And written on the coin itself, it has written in Hebrew. Baruch Ktav Lekutiyim, V'Koromiyad. We showed it to the locals and they read it. Kyu Ktav Ivri, Asher Nishal Lekutiyim. It's a Ktav Ivri that remains with the Kutiyim, which is the cursive, more circular Ktav Ivri, which you find on all the coins today, right, that you find. Kamoshim Muskar B'Sanhedrin. V'Koromin Etzad Achad Shekel HaShkalim. One side said Shekel HaShkalim. V'Etzad HaShini Yushalayim HaKdosha. This is the coin that he finds. That's what we just said before. So not a picture of oil like we thought, but a picture that had the tzintzenet aman. We measured it. The mishkala asara kesef isterlins. V'heim chatzi ha'unkia. She's kira beinu shlomo. That Rashi says. V'chein ra'iti min abeya tzurot. And he says v'hu nistayu rabbeinu shlomo siyu gadol. Says that Rashi was right. Says that I argued with Rashi when I lived in Chutz Laaretz, but now in Eretz Yisrael, and we found the coin. And that coin that I measured is exactly like Rashi's. This is an old coin, and I measured the coin, and it's valued, and the weight is exactly like the Chatzi Unkia. It's at the end of the Ramban, Chidushei Ramban Ala Torah. It's a letter that's at the end. I'll send it out to you that you can have the letter. It's an unbelievable statement here, but it comes out of Rashi here. This little Rashi that mentions that it's this Zahuv, that the dinar is equal to a zahuv, has huge implications in terms of weighting. The Ramban took issue with Al-Tor, wrote strongly against Rashi, and when he comes and does the excavations in archaeology in Eretz Yisrael, he finds out that Rashi was right. And he writes the letter back to his son saying that this is a proof to Rashi, and Rashi is right. Yeah, it's tremendous. He wrote back. He has a bunch of... So he wrote back. He has a number of letters that wrote back to something like 140 hiarot that he wrote on his Perush al Torah, including Kever Rachel, the location of Kever Rachel. He also corrects that based on his citing of Kever Rachel versus what he says in his Perush al Chumash, Perush in Parshat Vayechi. So he sends back letters about all these items there. He says, now that I've seen the archaeology or topography, I'm wrong, and I have to change my Perush. And this is one of the famous ones that he does based on this little Rashi here about the Constantine gold coin, that Rashi's right. That's a chatzi unkia, not a three quarters of an unkia. I just want to share that. It's exciting to see something like that, to share it with you. All right, I'll send it out. Okay, now the Gemara says, we don't burn anything besides his bed and his possessions. We are okir ala melachim beim b'shum darchei mori. What does that mean, okrim ala darchei mori? It means that you are allowed to somehow maim or render useless items of the king. So over here, the okrim is that they take the sus, they take the horse, and they remove its hoof, or they do something to its hoof, in order to make it, render it useless at this point in time, so nobody should ride on his horse anymore. So Amar Papa sush rachavalav. So he says that we're talking about here, when we're saying okrim al melachim, when you can do this to animals, we're talking about the horse that he rode. So that is klei tashmisho. That's also klei tashmisho. So that's why they did okrim al melachim. Amar says v'behema torah lo. It's true that, it's only a source, but not other animals. Vatan, you have a brisa. Ikur sheesh ba treifa asur. Shein ba treifa mutar. Ikur that causes a treifa is asur. That does not cause a treifa is mutar. Vezuhu ikur shein ba treifa. What's an ikur that doesn't have a treifa? Haminasher parsutel. That's someone who removes the hoof. That's if he removes the hooves, that's not a treifa anymore. Minar koval mato. That's only below the arkova. That's below the knee, right? The knee bone or down towards the shin. About if it's above that point in time, arkova ulamalo, right? If it goes above that point, then it becomes a treifa. So Tara Gemara Papa, Rav explained this. How is this clay tashmisho? Right? Be'egla moshechet bekaron. It's a calf. Or cow or ox that's pulling his wagon or his, the place that the throne in which the king sat in. So it's still something that serviced the king, and that's why you're allowed to be seraph, that's why you're allowed to maim it, in order to be something that is directed as kavod towards the king. Rashi says over here that Yeshba Trefa, Rashi says a statement which is unbelievable. He says, Isser le grom le behema trefot be adayim. Is it Isser to cause trefot to a item with the, by your hands? You're not allowed to make something into a trefa. So Tosfos asks on Rashi, that's what he says here. Rashi says over here about being the Isser trefa and no Isser trefa. The reason you can't be mitaref, that the reason that you can't make them into a trefa is because it's an Isser to make a behema into a trefa. Tosfos asking him, what do you mean? Where is there such an Isser? These aren't kachim. We don't have any Isser in the Torah to make something into a trefa. So what's Rashi talking about here? So Tosfos on the other hand says, no, this is whether it's mutar b'achila or ain't mutar b'achila. The Brisa or the Tosefta that we're quoting over here is talking about whether the item after you do this to it, can you eat it? And the Chiddush is, even though we're doing it l'kavod ha-melech, nevertheless, if it's not made into a treifa, you're permitted to eat it afterwards. And that's what the Chiddush is over here. So Rashi says the issur is for you to be gorei m'treifa. Tosefta says, no, we're asking whether you can eat this item or not eat this item afterwards. That's the question. The last issue is, why isn't this tzar balei chayim? What about tzar balei chayim and baal tashkis? Hey, why don't we have those problems? So Tosfos says, Baal Tashkit is only a problem when it's useless or meaningless. Over here, there's a purpose to what we do this. This is to be Noheg Kavod towards the king, and therefore we can't claim that it's Baal Tashkit because it has a purpose. That's not Baal Tashkit. But again, with Tzar Balei Chayim, what do you do with Tzar Balei Chayim here? Why are we allowed to do this? Tosfos makes an unbelievable statement. In the end, he says, Be'ish Lomar, the shiny Kvod HaMelech, Shu Kvod D'chol Yisrael. The Kvod HaKing is different because it's Kavod D'chol Klal Yisrael. Va'ati kavod rabim v'dochi tzar balei chayim. Tosfos says that you get the kavod of rabim, and that's doche tzar balei chayim. It's an unbelievable statement by Tosfos that you can be doche tzar balei chayim for kavod rabim. Now, what is Tosfos talking about here? Is this tzar balei chayim deoraita, or is this tzar balei chayim derabbanan? And what is this kavod rabim? Is this kavod rabim a din doraisa, therefore it could overcome tzar balei chayim deoraita, or is this just a right, din of derabbanan of tzar balei chayim, and therefore kavod rabim can overcome a din derabbanan? Tosfos over here doesn't discuss it. The sugya in Baba Metzia, which is much more extensive, we discussed it there by the Rishonim about what the source is, whether tzar balei chayim is deoraita or not deoraita. There, Tosfos takes a much more issue over here, but it's very interesting that Tosfos in dealing with over here is allowing kavod rabim to overcome the problem of tzar balei chayim. Okay, now the Gemara continues. Says that Yom Tiklachat Zekano, right? Or the day that he cuts his beard. Ibailu, Echad Tani, what is written in our Mishnah? Is it Yom Tiklachat Zekano, Vanachat Blorito? Is it the day on which he cuts his beard, but that does not touch his ponytail? Oh, Dilma, Yom Tiklachat Zekano, Vavarat Blorito. Or the day that he does both, he cuts his beard and removes cuts his ponytail once a year. So the question is it only significant as a Avodah Zarah? Here, is it Vava Chibur? We said he does both, shaves his beard and cuts the ponytail. If he does both of them, then it's a significant day. Or, standalone, if he just cuts his beard, and we would assume the same is true if he just cuts his ponytail, each of them is significant by themselves, and therefore that's a Deva Zarah. So it's a Tashma. The Danyo, we have a Brice, Tabayu, with both of them in it. Yom Tiklachat Zekano, Blorito, that the day that he does Zekano, Uva Nachat Blorito, and he leaves his ponytail, or Yom Tiklachat Zekano, Vehavarat Blorito, and he also takes off his ponytail. And the Rashi seems to say over here that the minog must have been, or Tosfos says the minog here must have been, that the time that they took off their ponytail, they also shaved. Now that taking off the ponytail is not significant, but it seems that they did both together. So therefore you have two cases, either a case where he just removes his beard, or the case where he moves his beard and his ponytail. Again, this is a machlokas Rashi in the Raivud in the Mishnah, whether this applies just to the king, that's the Raivud's position, or Rashi thinks it applies to any Obed Avodah Zarah. So over here, that both of those are holidays for them. Amar Yehuda Mishmo, Oda Cheret Yesh Lehem Beromi. There's another holiday in Rome. Achad L'Shivim Shana, every 70 years, Mevim Adam Shalem. They bring a whole person, I mean a person who is not maimed in any way. Umar Kivin Oto Adam Chiger. And they place him, he rides on the shoulders of someone who is lame, or someone who limps. Amabishim Oto Big Day Adam Arishon. They give him the cloak of Adam Arishon, Umeichin Barosho Karkifilo Shal Rabbi Shmuel. And they place on him the mask of the skin of Rabbi Shmuel. So what is this referencing to? We're going to see this in a second, but this is an indication of Esav and Yaakov. The one who limps is Yaakov. The one who's Shalem is Esav. So they put the Shalem on top of the limping one to indicate that Esav is ascendant over Yaakov. So he's sitting on top. Kapiflio Shel Rabbi Shmuel comes from the Asurei Hagrei Gamalchut. That's the story where the daughter of the ruler at the time said, I want to spare Rabbi Shmuel because I love his beauty. So he didn't agree to spare him, but they peeled off his face, right? They skinned his face in order to give it to her, to keep, until he cried when they got to the Makom Hanachat Tefillin. He called down and he cried. And they gave that skin. That skin was preserved in Rome, and in the Ginzei Romi, as Rashi says, it's still there, it's still a Daim Munach Ginzei Romi, and they used to bring it out as a mask whenever they used to do this ceremony every 70 years. And they used to walk around the Shuk. The Talulei B'Tzavarei, and around his neck they used to hang Matkal Reish Zuza, something that weighed 200 Zuz, the Pisa, some sort of special gold, it's unique gold, as Rashi calls, not found in the world anymore. It's this precious stone or precious gold that we do not have anymore. U'mechapin et teshvakim b'inach, and they decorate the shvakim with inach, we saw before it was a precious stone, probably something that's a carbuncle. U'machrizin lefanav, and they say before him, sach kirei plaster. What that means is, sach kirei plaster, some subject to a machlokas. The Rabbeinu Chananel says, Sakirei Plaster is going to be explained in the Gemara. The next statement is a quote, and now the Gemara is going to explain the quote in a second. That's one possibility. Or Tosafot and Rashi on the other hand say, no, Sakirei Plaster means, see that the Ketz HaYamin, the Ketz HaYamin that was predicted, according to Rashi, by Yaakov, and according to Tosafot, by Yitzchak, because Tosafot says, why would they give any significance to Yaakov? They respect Yitzchak, because Yitzchak was their forefather, grandfather, the father of Esav. So he said, the predictions of Yitzchak, or the predictions of the Ketz HaYamin of Yaakov, don't come true. They are false. So that's what the Torah, Yaakov says, Achrit HaYamim, he explains to his children, what's going to happen? They're going to be ascendant. They say, that's not true. And Tosafot says that which Yitzchak said, gave the brachot to Yaakov, those will not come true. They're not true, because it says that Yaakov will be ascendant, and that hasn't happened as well. And then, again, we saw the Rabbeinu Chananel says the explanations. The next line is, Achua de Marana Zayfano. That the brother of our master being Esav, Zayfano, is a stealer, a cheat, and he stole the brachot, and it didn't help him. Techami chami, whoever sees this, sees it. Lo chami, lo chami, whoever doesn't see this celebration won't see it, because it won't happen for another 70 years. So they said, Mayahani l'rama b'ramute, uzayfano b'zayfute. What happened to the cheat in his cheating and the one who was falsified in his falsehood? And it did nothing for him. See, he tried to get the brachot and we are ascended. And they end with this, Hochi, by the Dain, Kadyakum Dain, woe to be him, meaning Esav, Kadyakum Dain when Yaakov is ascended. Meaning that we're ascended now, so no problems. But woe that day when Yaakov comes to power or comes and is ascendant over us. So that's another day or holiday of Avodah Zarah that happens once every 70 years. That is also a significant holiday to Avodah Zarah. That's not mentioned in our Mishnah. Rav Ashi, Yechshilan P'em L'Rishayim. These Rishayim, their own mouth tripped them up. That there's a false is the brother of our master, that would have referenced to Yaakov, to the Amre. That's what they were thinking to say. Actually, the Amre, the Marana Zayfana, right, when they say the Zayfana after Marana, Achua de Marana Zayfana, then you could say Achua, comma, Marana Zayfana. Our master is the cheat. So Marana Gufe Zayfana, then our master himself is the one who is the false and the cheater. So that's what Rav Ashi says, they themselves called their own forefather a cheater, rather than what they intended to say, which is the brother of our forefather, Yaakov, was the cheater. Why does he not count this holiday? So the Hadith to B'chol Shat V'Shat to Chachoshiv. These are things that are recurring holidays, that's what he speaks about. The Let to B'chol Shat V'Shat to Chachoshiv. Something happens once every 70 years, he doesn't mention them.
Yom Eid of theirs doesn't seem like an Avodah Zarah. today that we don't want to be mechazik their yadayim on that day.
That's possible, although I think that the fact that the Gemara asked why wasn't it mentioned in the Mishnah already seems to indicate that it should have been included in the list of Yom Eidam.
Why should it have been? It's not about his
Zarah. Right? We don't know. All of these items were to celebrations that included some sort of Avodah Zarah. So it sounds like over here also that they practiced some sort of Avodah Zarah at the time that they had this holiday, this is the ceremony that was involved in it, but on top of that, they were makriv to Avodah Zarah at the time. That's one possibility. The other is what you were suggesting, which I don't think is far-fetched, to explain that this day is a so ma'us in our eyes because of the way that they treat or they speak about us and Yaakov that we don't want to be a participant. We don't have anything to do with it. So that is a possibility, although I think that it's more directed towards what is around here. Forgot to mention that why is he wearing the cloak of Adam HaRishon is because Bigdei Chamudot to Esav, Itab HaBayit. Remember, his mother has the Bigdei Chamudot to Esav that Yaakov dresses up with. So those Bigdei Chamudot, the Midrash tells us that those are the Bigdei Adam HaRishon. Right now it says, Hani de Romai, these are the holidays of the Romans. The Pasai Mai, what are the holidays of the Persians? Mutrade, Turiski, Mohardaki, Umorin. These are all the holidays of the Persians. Hani de Pasai de Romai, so now you give us the list of the Persian and the Roman holidays. The Bavlai Mai, what are the holidays of the Bavliim? So it says, Mahanaki, Bankite, Bechanuni, Eser, Beadar. So those are the other holidays of the Bavliim that we have. So Amar Rav Chanan Bar Rav Chist Amar Rav Amri Lo Amar Rav Chanan Bar Rav Amar Rav Chamishei Batei Avodot Chochovim Kuvuim Hein. There are five locations today when we know that they practice Avodah Zarah. These are locations. Ve'elohein. These are they. Beit Baal B'Bavel. This place Beit Baal in Bavel. Beit Nevo B'Kursi. Tarato Shibemefeg or Befang. Trifa Shibashkelon. And Nashra Shabir Arabia. So all these five locations we know are locations that they currently practice on a regular basis, practice of Avodah Zarah there. Kiati Rabdimi Osif Elehen, he added on, Yurid Shib Ein Bechi. And Nidbecha Shib Akko. Place the Yurid, it seems like the marketplace or the bazaar at Ein Bechi. And Nidbecha, this wall or some sort of place in Akko. Igadamre, it's Nidbaro Shib Akko. That it was a Nidbaro is the place in Akko. Rabdim Medor, Man Ipcho, Ezeach Kazapis. Read Shib Akko, and Nidbecha Shein Bechi. Reverse them. So Amar Rav Chanan Bar Rav Chista, my Kavuin. What does it mean that they're Kavuin? What does that mean? So Mehachi Amar Avu Adimech, this is what your mother's father said. Kvoin heim leolam. I mean that they are always there. Leolam tadira kula shata palchiluhu. All year round, they're worshipping Avodah Zarah in those places, and therefore you cannot interact with them, you can transact with them, you can't have anything to do with them all year round. So, b'amar shmol b'golayin asura lo yom edam bilvad. So today, or Mishmol says that when we're in the Gola, only the holiday day itself is problematic. Now over here, Rashi interprets, Rashi says, why is it Yom Eidam? He says, Ein anachnu yichol amir atzmeinu milisav liteinim ahem, shebenehem anachnu yushvim. We can't stop interacting with them. We live amongst them. We need to do business with them. We need to, for livelihood and for our basic necessities, we need to interact with them. Ve'od mishumira. We're afraid of them. And we don't want to, if we make a big deal or a big stink about this, they're not going to be happy. That's what Rashi says over here. Back on Zion with that, Rashi quoted the same thing about in Din of Shmuel. And over there he says two reasons why. In a dukim hayom, the Ovdei Rechamim are not a dukim in Avodah Zarah. He says the other one because of mistafina minayo. We are embarrassed to do such a thing. So you really have four reasons out of these two Rashis. The Rashi before and the Rashi here give four different reasons about the problem. We're afraid of them. We're embarrassed. They're not really so attached to their Avodah Zarah. Or the last one, which is that it's a necessity because we have to interact with them. So Rashi gives all four of these reasons to explain this principle of Shmuel that in the Gola we only deal with Yom Eidam. Where it says, "V'yom Eidam nami mi asur." Is it really asur? Rav Yehuda shorilei the Rav Bruna lizvunei chamro. He allowed Rav Bruna to buy a chamor. Rav Gidol lizvunei chitim to buy wheat b'chagto detai on the holiday of the merchants. Where it says, "Shani chagto detai to look via." The holiday of the merchants doesn't happen every year. It's a once in a blue moon type of thing, and therefore we're not choshesh so much for their holiday. It's a rare holiday. It's something that doesn't happen, and we don't assume that they're doing Avodah Zarah. If it's really for Avodah Zarah, they would have done it on a much more of a recurring basis. The fact that it's not on a recurring basis, therefore we can assume that it's not a holiday that you have to worry about in terms of interacting with them. That's why they permitted it over here. But still, at least that one day, the Chagim itself of Shmuel, we still say is a surah. Okay, we'll stop over here. We'll continue with the Mishnah tomorrow.